Well, where did you all come from? Goodness, really packed to Zendo today. No good sports on TV tonight, or?
You just come for the cookies.
Oh, the cookies, yes, we have good cookies tonight. Yes, we do. Well, welcome everybody, and we'll start by chanting together Hakuin Zenji's Song of Zazen, as we did last week. And so I hope everyone has either their own paper copy or the sutra book.
Page number?
This one's 18.
18. 18 in the book.
Okay, do you have? You do it? Oh, okay. So, let's begin. Hakuin Zenji, Song of Zazen. All beings by nature are Buddha, as ice by nature is water. Apart from water, there is no ice. Apart from beings, no Buddha. How sad that people ignore the near and search for truth afar. Like someone in the midst of water, crying out in thirst. Like a child of a wealthy home, wandering among the poor. Lost on dark paths of ignorance, we wander through the six worlds, from dark path to dark path. When shall we be free from birth and death? Oh, the Zazen of the Mahayana, to this the highest praise. Devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas, all have their source in Zazen. Those who practice Zazen even once wipe away beginningless obstructions. Where are all the dark paths then? The pure land itself is near. Those who hear the truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end. Much more those who turn about and confirm our self-nature that is no nature, go far beyond mere doctrine. Here, effect and cause are the same. The way is neither two nor three, with form that is no form. Going and coming, we are never astray. With thought that is no thought, even singing and dancing are the voice of the law. How boundless and free is the sky of samadhi. How bright the full moon of wisdom. Truly is anything missing now. Nirvana is right here before our eyes. This very place is the lotus land. This very body, the Buddha. Oh, thank you, everyone. Printer, I thought I had the wrong talk. Last Wednesday, we started looking at this poem. This is one, for those of you who are new here tonight, that we chant. A little bit unusual in that the poem is written by Rinzai. Rinzai Zen teacher, Hakuin Zenji. But it's one that is very powerful, written clearly, simply, unlike some of the other poems and texts that we chant. So I think it's a good one for us to look at closely. In Japanese, this poem is simply titled Zazen Wasan.
And last week I mentioned that the Japanese word wasan means like a song of praise to be chanted or to be recited. But I was thinking we might also translate it as an ode, O-D-E, right? A kind of lyric poem, usually composed by poets to, you know, nature. Wordsworth, for example, ode to a puddle. Or sometimes it's to a special person, as some of the older Greek and Roman odes were, or an emotion or an ideal. But in this case, I think it's an ode to Zazen, to the practice of Zazen. And it's rather unusual, even in East Asian literature. It's a little bit hard to tell in English, but it's this poem in Japanese. We can see clearly it's 22 couplets, and it's written in very colloquial Japanese of the time. And sometimes if you see other English translations, they break it into stanzas, but that wasn't the case in the original Japanese. Hakuin Zenji wanted this poem, and indeed much of his writings, to be very accessible to his students, who were not monks and nuns who had studied for long periods of time, but common people, some of them with no education at all. He wanted these poems to be teaching poems for them. And he lived, you know, in the 1700s, so this was a little bit radical at the time. So he wrote poems, and another technique he used that I thought is pretty cool is he would take the tunes from contemporary popular songs and give them lyrics that would express Buddhist teachings. So people would be able to hum along, you know, to Buddhist teachings. And this way, commoners, people who weren't monks and nuns or weren't well-educated, could learn and remember even some pretty challenging Buddhist teachings, which we're going to dip into tonight. And I thought, you know, hey, you know, maybe this is something we could try one day. And I was thinking of a song, I don't know how I heard this, but because I don't listen to pop music very much, but Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper's song, Shallow. Does that ring a bell with some people? Mm-hmm. It's kind of popular these days. Anyway, the lyrics go like this. Let me just give you a couple of the lyrics, because they kind of really, I think Hakuin Zenji would approve of these. So I can't sing it, so I'll just read these lyrics. It goes, tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world, or do you need more? Is there something else you're searching for? Next lyric. I'm falling in all the good times. I find myself longing for change. And in bad times, I fear myself. And it goes on from there. And I thought, hey, this is the first noble truth. This is the first noble truth of discontent and suffering in the world that we all experience. So now we would then compose the next verses to introduce the second, third, and fourth noble truth that the Buddha taught, kind of in the same way, and then we could all sing it together. So anyway, this is what Hakuin did with those popular songs of his day. So let's go back to the poem itself. I was reading a book by Zenkei Shibayama Roshi, who at one point was abbot of a very large Rinzai temple in Kyoto, Nanzenji. His writing has been translated into English, and he wrote a little bit about this particular poem. And he said it's divided, as far as he could tell, into three parts. The first 14 lines, he said, introduced the very foundation of Zen practice. And I think this is kind of what we talked about last week, that life is tough. There's dissatisfaction arises. We're caught in confusion, and we begin a spiritual journey of some kind to begin to look for a way out of our dissatisfaction, or a way to find comfort and ease in our life. Shibayama Roshi then goes on to say the next, lines 15 to lines 40 are really about the Zazen practice and experience itself. And that's what we're going to be looking at today. And then the very last few lines of the poem kind of conclude with the aims or the kind of result of a Zen practice, which is basically to live a whole and complete life, a life free of fear, a life of intimacy with this world. So last week, we talked about the first 14 lines, which introduced us to the basic truths of Buddhism, as I just said, and they kind of outlined the confused and inherent nature of ordinary sentient beings. And then it concluded with a very profound question about life and death. So I think Hakuin in this poem, in the first part of this, shows how we begin our own deep questioning, that it arises out of our discontent, however that's expressed, however we experience it. And each person, of course, would be unique. So I'm going to pick up from there with the next kind of couplet. O the Zazen of the Mahayana, to this the highest praise, devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas, all have their source in Zazen. So Mahayana means a great vehicle. And it's one of the two main streams of the Buddhist tradition. The other one being the Theravadan tradition, which means school of the elders. So the Theravadan school today, we see mostly in Sri Lanka, Burma, or Myanmar, Thailand, Cambodia, and they tend to be very conservative in their approach to practice. And the Mahayana, I think, is quite distinctive in that it upholds the ideal of the bodhisattva, a kind of a being, a person, who vows to put off her own final awakening or enlightenment and work for the benefit of others until all other beings are awake. So this becomes a kind of ideal within the Mahayana tradition, right? Person who's dedicated their life, their practice to others. And the Mahayana schools, the various flavors of the Mahayana are found in Tibet, China, Korea, and Japan. And Vietnam. So the Zazen of the Mahayana. Zazen, and one meaning of Zazen is the deep practice of meditation that is, of course, found in many schools of the Mahayana tradition, but particularly in the Zen school. And in Sanskrit, you would actually translate the Chinese characters of Za and Zen into something like jhana samadhi. And jhana or jhana is understood as a state of equanimity or state of kind of clear, steady awareness. And samadhi generally means one-pointed concentration, right? The mind not bouncing around but focused on one thing. Now, we commonly use the word Zazen to simply refer to our meditation practice. But here I think Hakuin is using the term to include that, but also to include Zazen as the very ground, inherent ground of our unperturbed awareness, our true nature. He's talking about something that goes beyond the kind of coming and going of our everyday mind, talking about the very ground, very nature of who we are. And we, when we sit in our meditation practice, I think, become a little more aware of what this true nature may be, especially when we sit for longer periods of time at a retreat, for example. The mind quietens down and something spacious seems to arise. But the Zen understanding is that this true nature that we have is always with us. It's not something we cultivate or grow. It's something that is always there. And in a sense, we simply develop awareness of it. We open to it. And in this way, we give it life. So Hakuin gives Zazen the highest praise, this kind of fundamental nature of who we are. And then he explains why. And he does this by calling on the practices of the Bodhisattva. So the practices of the Bodhisattva, then, he lists, or at least some of them, and they're laid out in what are known as the six paramitas, or the six perfections. And these are a kind of generosity, or impartial generosity, which means generosity to everyone, moral discipline, patience or endurance, energy or exertion on the path, meditation, and prajna, or deep wisdom. These are the practices of a bodhisattva, the qualities that a bodhisattva really works to cultivate within themselves and then share throughout the world. And we find these six paramitas, and sometimes there's a few more added depending on the particular Mahayana stream, but they're all throughout the Mahayana tradition. They're really connected deeply with the vows of a bodhisattva. But Hakuin tells us that the source of all of these great practices, the source of all of these is in Zazen. The source of them is actually within our true nature itself. And our nature of a kind of interbeing with all others, interbeing with all things, interbeing with everyone else. This is our true nature. And out of this naturally arises these six perfections, these six paramitas. They're not separate, standalone disciplines or qualities. They are always there. And this is true for other practices that he then goes on, like devotion, repentance, chanting the names of Buddha. And Hakuin, in other writings, makes it very clear that he doesn't reject these at all, that he sees them as very important and encourages us to take up some of these practices. But they are not ways to get us somewhere else. They're rather skillful means to wake us up to what is already present. They are expressions of what we ultimately are. So next couplet. Now those who practice Zazen even once wipe away beginningless obstructions. Where are all the dark paths then? The pure land itself is near. So I think in this couplet we can kind of see the exuberance of Hakuin and his devotion to Zazen, both of which he's quite famous for in his other writings. But there's something more. It's not just exuberance. When we sit down on our cushion and calm the body and we calm our mind, mindfully breathing in and out, we enter, however briefly, a place of calm. And in those moments of calm, there are no obstructions. There's no dark or fearful paths. We're just present with our life as it is. We've entered, we could say, the Pure Land, a place or celestial realm of a Buddha, where according to the Pure Land Buddhist tradition, it's much easier to awaken. So, next couplet. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end. When I read this, I was thinking about a term coined by a religious studies scholar named Thomas Tweed. And that term is nightstand Buddhists. A nightstand Buddhist. So Tweed wrote this. He wrote, nightstand Buddhists, then, are those who may place a how-to book on Buddhist meditation on their nightstand, on their little table, right, with the light. Say, for example, the Three Pillars of Zen, and read it before they fall asleep. And then the next morning, they may get up, do a little practice, however imperfectly or ambivalently, and then try to practice maybe a little bit what they had read the night before. Anyone here do that? Have Buddhist books by your nightstand and read a little bit? Or in the morning? So Hakuin, I think, here is telling us maybe at this moment you can't become a monk or a nun and devote your whole life to Zazen practice 24/7. Maybe at this moment in your life, you can't commit to Zazen practice. But there's still merit to reading, thinking about, applying the teachings as best we can, given our present situation. He said there's merit there. Don't discount it. And then he goes on to the next part, which I think is really the whole crux of the poem, or the heart of the poem. Much more, those who turn about and confirm our self-nature that is no nature, go far beyond mere doctrine. Here, effect and a cause are the same. The way is neither two nor three. So Zazen, here, Hakuin outlines it a little bit for us, using words and phrases that come from earlier Zen ancestors. So, for example, in the Fukan Zazengi, the text that Dogen Zenji wrote, Universal Recommendations, Instructions for Zazen, and Dogen, again, for those people who may not know, is the Japanese monk who brought this form of Zen from China to Japan. So anyway, Dogen wrote, therefore, put aside intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Body and mind of themselves will drop away and your original face will manifest. If you want to realize such, get to work on such right now. The basic characteristic of Zen is that truth cannot be found outside, or in books, or in the teachings of others, but only within. And why is this the case? Because, as Hakuin states at the very beginning of this poem, all beings by nature are Buddha. Self-nature, in this poem, he writes, is the very ground of our being. Our self-nature is Buddha, one that is all-inclusive. And being all-inclusive, there is no one and nothing outside that we can point to and say, oh, that's Buddha. And this may seem impossible, but as Hakuin says, we can only confirm this through our practice and experience it when we have finally let go of our dualistic ways of thinking. We sit in Zazen, we let go, and we see, we experience, we taste who we are. Here, cause and apart. Here, effect and cause are the same. Now, this is a kind of interesting statement. The experience of self-nature that is no nature, I think he's basically telling us we need to let go and go beyond our usual way of subject-object, me-you kind of dualism that we live our life by. And this is also true of future-past. We can let go of that, entering profoundly into the present moment that includes both future and past. It's rather hard to explain this in a short talk. But I think one day, when I or Kate are feeling particularly courageous, maybe we'll study Uji, Dogen's work on time, and time being, as it's called. But that goes beyond what I can say tonight. But for now, let me give you a short quote from my favorite Chinese ancestor of all time, Zhao Zhou. And he wrote this. One day, or rather this is recorded of him, one day a monk asked Zhao Zhou, how should we employ our mind throughout the 24 hours? And Master Zhao Zhou replied, you are used by the 24 hours. This old monk can use the 24 hours. Isn't that great? I mean, don't you feel you're used by the 24 hours? Like, I got to finish this Dharma talk in 5 minutes, right? We're used by time. But we can also use time. This is, I think, what Hakuin Zenji is getting at when he says, effect and cause are the same. The way is neither two nor three. That last line there is a reference to the Lotus Sutra, perhaps the most influential sutra or teaching in all of East Asian Buddhism, so China, Japan, Korea particularly. And in this sutra, it states that the Buddha taught many paths as skillful means to help all beings. But in truth, there is only one path. And for Hakuin, this path is Zazen. So let me go on just the next couplet. With form that is no form, going and coming, we are never astray. With thought that is no thought, even singing and dancing are the voice of the law. This couplet kind of reminds me a bit of the Heart Sutra. One of the chants that we chant here every time we do service. So we always do the Heart Sutra, at least almost always. And this couplet acknowledges the freedom we experience with practice. So let me kind of illustrate it this way. One day, we are a student wearing jeans and a t-shirt. And maybe the very next day, we're a barista making drinks for customers at J.J. Bean wearing black t-shirt, black pants. I don't know what they wear at J.J. Bean anymore. And then on the weekend, we dress up in our best to meet our girlfriend or boyfriend. One form arises after another. Without clinging to any of those, we live freely. You're not stuck in being a student. You're not stuck in being the barista. And you're not stuck in just being the boyfriend or girlfriend. Form that is no form. Sometimes, though, we think we are stuck, right? Sometimes we think we are stuck, right? I'm the guy who can't do anything right. I'm the guy who can never get the girl. I'm the guy who, you can fill in the blank, right? We get stuck. But with Zazen, coming and going, we are never astray. Developing our practice, we meet our life moment after moment with a kind of clarity, not trying to avoid, deflect, distract. We meet our life. With thought that is no thought, even singing and dancing are the voice of the law. Thought that is no thought. Well, that's really the whole heart of our Zazen practice. Again, Dogen tells us, giving us this great meditation instruction, of once you've adjusted your posture, take a deep breath, inhale, exhale, rock your body right and left, and settle into steady, immovable sitting position. And then think of not thinking. And how do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. This in itself is the essential art of Zazen. With thought that is no thought. Alive, present, fully awake, not engaged, just in the present moment. Now, when we do this, we see that everything expresses Dharma, even singing and dancing. Hakuin did not sing, he sung. He wrote all these poems and changed verses for people to sing. He used everything. And we can too. I think we should try dancing next, myself. How boundless and free is the sky of samadhi, how bright the full moon of wisdom. Truly is anything missing now. Nirvana is right here before our eyes. This very place is the lotus land, this very body, the Buddha. So he leaves us with these encouraging words. And maybe I could say he challenges us with these words. This very place is the lotus land. This very place is the pure land. Right here. Right in this zendo. Right at your workplace. Right in your apartment with your partner, your family. That's the pure land. And this very body, this body that we criticize or, you know, want to bulk up or slim down or have more hair on or have less hair on, or this very body is the Buddha. So here's my question for tonight. We'll get together and discuss a little bit. How do you experience this? And you could say, I don't experience this at all. This is not the pure land. This is hell realm. But how do you, he's telling us this very place is the lotus land. This very place. You, your body, you are Buddha. So I'd like to ask, I mean, at some moments I'm sure we all experience this. We taste this. We sense this. So I'd like you to talk about maybe a moment when you do experience this, where you may experience it more than other places, and then what gets in the way? What stops us from seeing, like right here before our eyes, is Nirvana? What stops us from doing that? What do you think in your life? Is that pretty clear? So we're going to get into our usual triads, a group of three. Just cluster whoever's closest. Let me just finish my little spiel before we move. One person will go, they'll have 3 minutes to speak, and then I'll ring a bell. The next person will have three, and then three. There's no crosstalk. We just listen intently to what that person is saying. If you run out of things to say in those 3 minutes, just the three of you can just sit quietly. If something else arises that you sparks that you want to add on to what you've just said, please feel free to do that until the 3 minutes are used up. And what is said here just stays here. We don't bring it up when we go for cookies and tea. And once we get into groups, just say your names to each other so you're familiar, and then I'll ding the bell for the first person to begin. Okay, let's try clump up now into groups of three.